Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Rudy Obias, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yay! Rudy Obias is with us today. Thank you so much. You know, what's funny is I think I was originally going to have you slated to be on sometime in August, and then I forgot about it. I feel
I'm
bad.
Easily forgettable. That's
oh. Well, because we actually had a chance to hang out in person.
Yeah, I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and I got to hang out with Kevin Carr when I was in town at the beginning of August.
We went and saw Planet of the Apes at a press screening in Cleveland, and we went to Quaker Steak and Lube.
Yeah.
I got chicken wings. You got...
And I get to watch you eat atomic fire wings, which is pretty funny to watch.
I was crying and hiccuping. It was the weirdest thing because these things are so spicy. They're like, to put it in perspective, I think it's like the atomic wings that they have. No, they have the supercharged wings, which are six times hotter than just regular old spicy wings, and then the atomic wings are like 150,000 Scoville units, so they're like 30 times as hot as the supercharged wings. And I'm eating them, and I'm crying. And I mean, I'm not like weeping.
And I'm just, laughing my eyes are the whole watering. Time watching you cry.
Yeah, because it was you and your brother, and I think your brother was fascinated by the fact that I would do that to myself.
And I also got to find out that you were at one time a competitive eater.
That's right. That's because we were talking, and I actually had a contest at that very Quaker Steak and Lube one time for hot wings, not those super, you know, atomic wings. But yeah, I used to. You know what's funny is I just was contacted by somebody wanting to interview me about the competitive eating thing.
Man, are you going to get back in the game?
No, it's way too competitive, and it's not healthy to push your when it was just like randomly eating as many hot dogs as you can on a Saturday afternoon. That's not terrible for you. What's really terrible for you is like training your body to eat that much and doing it on a regular basis. That's when it's not good for you. But I went to this, there's a competitive eating website called eatfeats.com. And if you search my name, It actually links to news stories. Anytime I've ever mentioned competitive eating, and like when I wrote for FSR, or when I still write for FSR, but like when I wrote an article for FSR a couple of years ago, it's you know, because of course the RSS feeds it'll search by keyword, and so they have these weird links. They have a link to the Fat Guys of the Movie site where I said I was going to start my own religion. it's listed as like a news section. It's like Kevin Carr is trying to start his own religion because. You know, about 3 years ago, Neil and I wanted to start Fat Guy in Addicts.
or as I'm reading here from 2007, Kevin Carr Competitive Eating Podcast.
Yeah, I had an Eat Feet Eatcast, which you can still find if you search Eatcast. You can still find the Kevin the Competitive Eating Podcast, and we interviewed. I don't know if I interviewed Crazy. I think we interviewed Crazy Legs Connie for that once he was on there, and so I mean it was an interesting time. And my son was with me when we were at the Quaker Steak, and he ate a single wing.
Yeah,
and it was rough. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that burns you twice. If you get my drift. Anyways, but yeah, Rudy. First of all, let's get through the contact information. You tell us a little bit about yourself for people who don't remember. I think the last time you were on, golly, was back in March for Sucker Punch.
Yeah, about Sucker Punch.
Yeah. But you can reach us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies. You can go to the Fat Guys Network on iTunes and get all of our podcasts. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM. And that will get you to our Facebook page so you can like us. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com or leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can also check in on Get Glue. Yeah. We have a guy named Andrew who does it all the time. He's a loyal listener. So thanks to Andrew for always making sure to click in and check in on Get Glue. But people can do that. So you can go listen to Fat Guys.
Is there a Fat Guys sticker for Get Glue yet?
I don't think there's a mayor of Fat Guysville or a sticker or whatever that means. We should make one. I'm just way too lazy. to do it. But anyways, Rudy, tell us who you are and where you write for and what you do and all that
Well,
stuff.
My name is Rudy Obias. I'm a freelance film critic living here in beautiful New York City. I am the movies editor for Shakya.com, and I host my own podcast called The AutorCast, which is a podcast dedicated to filmmakers, their movies, and film criticism. What we generally do, we pick a filmmaker and then discuss the movies within their catalog and then discuss why this filmmaker is important.
That is way more intellectual than what we do on this show.
talking about movies from Quentin Tarantino, Christopher Nolan, Stanley Kubrick, and David Fincher.
Ed Wood.
We'll get to Ed Wood. We actually want to do a series on Zack Snyder. We want to do a series on Michael Bay. And I know how much you love Michael Bay, Kevin Carter. And I want to do a series on actually Brett Ratner, because I feel he's a filmmaker at least worth discussing.
God help me, I want to see Tower Heights. He's one of those filmmakers. I hate him. I think he's an awful person. He's a jerk, an arrogant SOB. But, you know, I like his movies. I hate myself.
I actually like his movies, too. I mean, I like Rush Hour and Rush Hour 2 quite a bit. I kind of like Money Talks and Weatherman. And I actually really I'm looking forward to Tower Heist myself. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Did he do The Weatherman with Nicolas Cage?
No, that wasn't him. What was the Nicolas Cage movie he did with Tia Leone?
Oh, that was it was not a Single Man. There's way too many mans in this. The Family Man.
Family Man, yes.
Yeah.
And that too. That was Brett Ratner directed that, and I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. So, okay, well, we'll see about that. The Brett Ratner. You'll get through the Brett Ratner auteur collection. That just sounds wrong.
That is raw.
It leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Let's move ahead to the show, movies we got to review. We're just going to blast through this trailer real quick. It's Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, actually. Nick Swardson stars as a loser who discovers his destiny is to be an adult film star.
Don't let these people get you down. You're destined for greatness.
Tonight, we're going to watch nude movies.
Is that who I think it is?
That's your folks.
I'm the son of two stars.
We were gonna tell you on your 50th birthday.
This is my destiny. I'm gonna go to California, and I'm gonna be a star on the silver screen. I'm the son of two movie stars. That's like a super duper movie star.
I didn't see this. You didn't see it. Nobody saw this. I actually know somebody who was on the junket, and he didn't get to see the movie because they didn't even show it to him to interview the people. So this is gonna be awful.
Yeah, if they're not even showing it to the people who are going to be interviewing the talent of this movie, then it's no hopes that this movie's going to be any good.
But God help me, I kind of want to see it. Maybe Brett Ratner directed it. I don't know. It looks so bad. But I kind of want to see it. I don't know. It's just crazy. But it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. But as we leave you to go to the break, we're going to leave you with the trailer for Creature, Big Teeth Eating Beautiful People in the Louisiana Bayou.
Things after us.
You know, legend, son.
My dad was way into all this kind of stuff.
Is that right? You all going out there? Best watch your step. There's worse things than gators, you know.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yay! Yep. we just left you on the Creature trailer, which is a low budget monster movie that's actually getting a pretty wide release. I had heard it was only going to be in like the top 20 markets, but it like opened in Columbus, which is not one of the top 20 markets, or we would have gotten more screenings for
everything else. I didn't even hear about this movie until you asked me about this movie.
Yeah, I
had no idea what this movie was.
It's really odd that it kind of came out of nowhere. And I mean, and here's the thing, a movie like this, these movies normally just get direct to DVD.
Yeah.
It's just a low budget monster creature feature, you know, and it's
I watched the trailer and it looked really just run of the mill creature monster movie.
It reminds me, and I'll tell you, it reminded me of Hatchet, only without just it's a monster instead of just a serial killer, and it's not as overtly gory. But then again, Hatchet was Hatchet unrated? The original was.
Yeah.
Or did they? I don't know if did the original even get a theatrical release?
The original Hatchet did, and then Hatchet 2 got like a theatrical release, but it only lasted for 2 days.
It was like 12 hours. They. Theaters, didn't they like pull it right away because nobody went
although Hatchet does have a big following, no one went to see these movies
because no one wanted to pay $10 to see it in the theater. They'll rent it for $1, you know. But Creature, it was a fun movie. It's loaded with breasts, and it's got nudity, it's got violence, it's got killing, it's got a monster, it's got some really twisted stuff that actually doesn't sink in unless you were to watch it a second time, and you'd be like, oh, wait a minute, that means this, and ooh, you know. But it's a fun little creature feature. That's the best I can say about it. It wasn't fantastic, it wasn't groundbreaking, but it was kind of cool. That's the best I could say. So I'm actually going to say it kind of rocked.
I'll check it out.
Cool. If you like these horror movies, like I said, I
saw the trailer and it looked a little bit fun, and I do enjoy horror films like this every now and then.
Yeah. So yeah, check it out. The next one we're going to talk about is Warrior, which is the big fighting. This is this year's fighter movie for Oscar contenders consideration. Two brothers wind up going head to head in an ultimate fighting championship.
Growing up, we all wanted to know the toughest kid in the neighborhood was, right? Toughest man on the planet is. That's what we're gonna find out.
There's this big tournament. Top 16 middleweights in the world. And when it takes all, I'm gonna need a trainer of that much you were good at.
War hero Tommy Reardon, who has become an overnight sensation, and Brendan Conlon, the physics teacher, they pulled off a miracle.
Now you saw this. I didn't see it because they didn't screen it in Columbus, but
I saw this a few weeks ago and I actually really enjoyed it. You compared it to The Fighter, a movie that came out last year that was nominated for Best Picture, and I actually think that this movie is a little bit better than The Fighter. This is actually really emotionally brutal and physically brutal. I think the MMA stuff in this is just extremely brutal to watch, more so than boxing. And I like this trend that it's going. If MMA is going to be like the new boxing, I'm all for it, because you actually really get how intense it is to be in this kind of a ring and all these people cheering. It's a very, very good movie.
Okay. Is it what I've heard? Because I've heard some good things about it, but I've also heard that it's a bit cheesy, that it throws every sports movie cliche at you.
It's a bit on the nose. It's a bit conventional, but it's just so very well done. Mm-hmm. I have to kind of overlook stuff like that. I mean, if this was poorly put together, I would tell you don't see this movie, that it's absolutely horrible, but it works. Mm-hmm. And it was very well put together. This movie is a bit long. It's like 2.5 hours long, but it needs to be, because it actually does follow both brothers. They devote equal amount of time to each brother, which is pretty cool. And so in that way, it's a really complete film.
One of my favorite parts of the trailer is when they put on the screen, they say brought to you or directed by from the director of Miracle.
Yeah.
And then like 10 seconds later, or like just a couple seconds later in the trailer, you hear somebody go, "It'll take a miracle to finish," or something. And I'm like, I felt like Peter Griffin just sort of giggling, because they didn't say the name. I mean, I kept waiting for him to say, "He's such a warrior."
Well, I did kind of laugh to myself when they actually said that in the movie, because I knew that, you know, Gavin O'Connor, I believe his name is, directed Miracle, and he directed this as well. And if you like Miracle, you'll most likely like the Warrior.
Did you like The Fighter? Were you a fan of The Fighter last year?
Not really. I didn't think it was as good as a lot of people were saying it was. Even Christian Bale's performance, I thought, wasn't as spectacular as a lot of people would lead on.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was pretty overrated for what kind of movie it was. I think Warrior is a far better film than The
Fighter. Okay. Cool. So what's the official Fat Guy's grade on that?
It rocks.
Oh, okay. Cool. We'll do the next one is Contagion, An infection is spreading through the human population, causing a worldwide panic.
It was a groundbreaking ceremony for a new factory.
Did you mention seeing anyone who was sick? Anyone on a plane at the airport?
No, she said she was jet lagged.
The average person touches their face 3 to 5 times every waking minute. In between, we're touching doorknobs, water fountains, and each other.
Beth! Go up to your room, honey.
So we have a virus with no treatment protocol and no vaccine at this time.
Now, we both saw this one, but I want to get your take on this first. What do you think of Contagion?
Contagion, it was a pretty all right movie. I don't think it was anything as great as this filmmaker has in him. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh.
This filmmaker. This person.
This person. It kind of felt like his 2000 film Traffic. But I don't think it was as good as Traffic. I think it wasn't
as hard hitting as Traffic.
Yeah, it has a lot of great elements in it, but to me, it really never comes together.
Mm-hmm. The thing with Contagion. Well, first of all, I think it would have probably done better if they released it during cold and flu season.
Even more so.
Well, and it's one of those movies that you watch, and any movie you see is like this. If you're in a theater and it's crowded, at some point somebody's going to cough. Somebody's going to sniffle because that's what people do. I mean, you know, you put 400 people in a theater, you're going to have one person who's got a cold of some sort. But it's really funny watching the audience reaction when somebody coughs. I encourage people to go to this movie and have a coughing fit in the middle of it. And to then like trip on somebody and like, you know, oh, and like, you know, breathe on them. And just to see people panic. No, I'm not saying to insane.
Oh, bring a lot of Purell. Just keep using that on your hands.
Bathe in Purell. I thought, here's the thing. I think it's a good movie. I think it's worth checking out. It's not a waste of time. But you're right in the sense that Soderbergh is kind of shackled by his own conventions because he's, especially since Traffic, and well, even going back to his earlier films, he's very much that sort of fly on the wall, cinema verite kind of filmmaker, wanting to kind of catch a documentary-ish style. And I think whereas it worked in Traffic, it really, really worked in Traffic, it actually removes the audience too much from this movie.
Yeah.
And it just, it seems almost overly clinical. And you don't get this is really scary. The concepts are incredibly scary, that there's a disease that will kill 1 in 4 people who contract it, and it's likely going to, you know, half the population is going to contract it. So you're talking at hundreds of millions of people dying.
See, I never really get the impression in the movie that many people are dying. They keep saying that.
Well, they said it, yeah.
But they never really show it. They're not really showing a lot of people in body bags getting thrown into like fires or pits. And I never really got that impression that many people are dying, even though they keep saying millions of people are dying.
Yeah, and I think that was the sort of like the way he approached it. It was because he's trying to tell the story from people's points of view as you're at home and you don't want people to come in your house. And so you're getting stuff from news reports. But he also has people from the CDC and the World Health Organization. He's following their stories. But I think sometimes they just kind of they wander. There's a like Marion Cotillard, who I'm not a big fan of. Her character just kind of just wanders down this path.
Yeah.
And never really has a decent resolution. But it's also
her storyline is never really explored at all. And I thought that was could have been a little bit interesting. I mean, they introduced this element into the movie and then they don't revisit it for like 40, 45 minutes until kind of the very end.
Yeah, it lacked oomph. I mean, it was well done, but it lacked oomph. And I know what he was going for, but I just don't think that the style in which he directed it played as well to the film as it could have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a serviceable film. I'm not saying it was really that bad, but I don't think it's that great either. It's pretty good. I would recommend people see it, but yeah. I don't think it's a home run.
Ideally, this kind of movie, you'd want people to be terrified of germs after this, and I don't think anybody would. No one's picking up Purell on the way home from this film. So even with that said, I say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks, I would say that.
Cool. We got to go to a break, and we'll be back.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment, the third segment, where the gloves come off and we do the mixed martial arts version of podcasting, where you can swear and talk about taints and stuff like that.
You and taints. You always, every time I'm on here, whenever I listen to your show, you always talk about taints.
Really? I like never talk about taints. I just happen to, maybe it's you.
It's always when I'm on.
You bring out my inner taint. I don't know what that, I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that's good or bad. It's got to be bad. It's not good. Unless you think it is. I don't know. so we finished talking about Contagion. Actually, you know what's interesting? I may actually pull this from the Skype audio, a little bit of a spoiler-heavy further discussion of Contagion, where we talk a little bit more in depth. Just we're chatting, and I'm like, well, this is actually pretty cogent discussion here, so maybe I might pull that and put that up on a...
The gems usually come when we're not recording.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was a...
is when I start to shine.
No, but we talk a little bit more, but it's a very very spoiler heavy thing. So actually, you know what I think I might do? I might go ahead and just tack it on the end of the episode. So if you're listening to the episode, when we play out the credits, I'm going to drop in that last spoiler heavy section of our discussion. And so if you haven't seen Contagion, you can turn it off then, but then you can listen to it later. Because it was good. It was a good discussion. We were making fun of... Yeah.
And also, if you think about it, Contagion is Steven Soderbergh's second-to-last movie. I just thought of that.
Wait, is he quitting? Or is he going to, like, die? Is this like Logan's Run?
Like, you said the next movie he's going to do, which is going to be The Man from U.N.C.L.E., mm-hmm. I think, which comes out next summer, is going to be his last movie. He's going to retire from filming.
I don't believe any of that retiring bullshit.
Well, he did say he's going to take, like, maybe 5 to 8 years off from filmmaking and do other things.
Have children? Isn't that what like people do? That's like when Julia Roberts retired from acting, and I'm like, yeah, that'll last because then she's at home with kids and everyone's not like, oh, you're beautiful and you're so awesome. And so she needs that. They're all narcissists. They need to be on set and having people fawn over them. I'm cynical.
I think a lot of people are putting a lot of emphasis on Contagion because if those rumors or what Steven Soderbergh's saying is true, then this is his second-to-last movie, and I think a lot of people are putting more value on this movie than
really?
Necessary.
I hadn't heard that, but I don't always follow the entertainment news as much as I should. Maybe is he planning on getting sick and then infecting the worldwide population with with like super cholera or whatever?
Maybe he is. Maybe he just doesn't want to make Ocean's 14.
Ocean's 14. Because, yeah, we don't need that. I don't know. I think we had talked in the and like I said, this will be tacked on at the end of the show, maybe. If it's not there, sorry. But this is, if we tacked this on at the end of the show, as we talked about, we said, you know, he attempts to do a lot of what he did with Traffic, but just not as rich and full and as well thought out.
Yeah. So. It was a better script with Traffic.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just people getting sick.
Yeah. And I think it was a little less star heavy as Traffic. I mean,
it's pretty star heavy. I mean, they have like 80, it's like an animated film. It's got 87 names in the title. Or the post.
Well, I mean, I'm in Traffic. Like when Traffic came out, Don Cheadle really wasn't as big, yeah. And Bill Turo wasn't as big. I think the only big name in there was Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, but even like the other name stars, like Dennis Quaid was in it, but it wasn't like they were pushing Dennis Quaid. Benicio del Toro wasn't a big name until after Traffic.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for that, and he wasn't as big. Same thing with Don Cheadle wasn't as big as. You know,
well, he did play Bud Swope in Boogie Nights.
In Boogie Nights, so great, great role in Boogie Nights. Movie. But in Contagion, you have Matt Damon's is a big draw. Is a big draw, and Lawrence Fishburne and Kate Winslet. We have a lot of heavy hitters in this movie, acting wise.
That is true. So let's talk real quick about box office. But one last weekend. Now, what's interesting is I remember 2 weeks ago was Hurricane Irene, And I think I said this on the show last week. To blame Hurricane Irene for the bad box office of like Columbiana Shark Knight was, or no, it was Columbiana and Our Idiot Brother. I don't think you can blame Hurricane Irene for those movies not doing well.
You can blame us's interest not to go to the movies.
Yeah, you can blame the movies for not being good movies. And this week, I very similar thing. It was like they were like, oh, it was, and I remember saying, oh, The Help's gonna win again. And it was funny, as if you look at it, The Help did better than the previous week.
Yeah,
so
a 2% drop from one week to the other.
People aren't staying away from movies; they're just staying away from certain movies that are just the new ones that are being released. And same thing this last weekend. Labor Day is always a crappy time for movies. But, you know, Shark Night came in fifth. I think I actually predicted that. And The Debt, I knew The Debt would come in next because it was sort of this grown-up movie. And the American one last year, and it was a very similar style of film.
Yeah, same. Both focus features as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. And Apollo 18, it was like... It didn't do well, but it was like it did okay. I mean, I saw Apollo 18. I actually kind of liked Apollo 18. A lot of people were ripping on it. A lot of people saying it was boring. It's paranormal activity in space. It's the same kind of deal. So if, I can't imagine. I find it a little bit intellectually dishonest to like rave about the paranormal activity movies and then say like Apollo 18 was boring.
I didn't see Apollo 18. I was actually kind of looking forward to seeing it because the trailer looked pretty good.
Yeah. It's not a great film. It's not great. So don't go in expecting anything great. But it's way better than Shark Night. I mean, there's this group of... What's funny is that Thursday night, a bunch of people went to go see movies at midnight. And Shark Night... A lot of people went and saw Shark Night at midnight. There was this group of critics in Austin, I think they're in Austin, who all went together and saw Shark Night together, and they all loved it because they sort of loved it, that ironically loved it, like it was they got quote unquote the joke that Ellis was doing with it. But I think that was the only group that liked it.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know how much of a joke would it have been because, I mean, Shark Night was like PG-13. I haven't seen it, but from what I heard, there's no nudity and no gory violence, and that's kind of what you want from a movie like Shark.
Yeah,
you want in a 3D.
Yeah, and the thing is, I heard people go, "Oh no, I had great kills." I'm like, "No, dude, every single kill was totally predictable." Like, there's this is a spoiler, I guess. There's a scene where people are going across jet ski or boat or whatever, and a shark leaps out of the water and eats them. And as they're driving, they're like, they like hit a open spot of water. I'm like, well, shark's going to jump out and eat them. There it, and it did it. You know, I mean, everything was so predictable. Not even it wasn't predictable because that's how horror movies roll. It was just predictable because I'm like, well, it's obvious that's what he's going to do. It wasn't funny. I think he thought he was being way too clever. And you know, it reminded me of watching, the America's Funniest Home Videos where Bob Saget laughs at his own jokes and you're just like, that's not funny. And you laughing about it doesn't make it any funnier. It just makes it worse. So yeah, I didn't like Shark Night.
So what
Apollo
box office this week?
Yeah, it's plummeted already. It made $10 million over the 4-day weekend. The Help almost made twice as much as either Apollo 18. If you combine Apollo 18 and Shark Night, that's about what The Help made over the 4-day weekend. And The Help's been out for 4 weeks.
Well, do you think The Help's going to have a good weekend this weekend?
It's still going. It's got legs. It's going to have this steady burn. And it's not that The Help's a great, great movie. It's just it's a well-made movie, and it's entertaining. It's a crowd pleaser and a button pusher. But it's just it had like 2 weeks with no competition. Contagion's going to win the weekend.
I think it's going to be Contagion, and then probably The Help at number
two. Yeah.
Then probably like Warrior or The Debt. which is for like kind of adults storytelling types of movies. Yeah. There's not a lot of like fanfare or CGI, just a lot of really sophisticated storytelling, which is kind of weird to me if that happens.
Well, that's typical of this time of year.
Yeah, but we still have movies like Columbiana and like you were saying, Shark Night and Apollo 18. They're still not going to do as well as very well made movies.
Yeah, that's true. I think Contagion's got a really high theater count, so I think it's going to do pretty well. And it's not like 3 hours long. It's very digestible.
Yeah.
And I think The Help will still be up there. Warrior's in like 1,700 theaters, and so it's not as widespread as The Help, but I think it's definitely going to beat The Debt. I mean, The Debt only made $13 million. It's 4 days, so like next week it's going to be like seven. So probably $6 million over the three-day weekend. So I think Warrior's going to do okay. It's getting buzz, and it's that fighter movie for the Oscar season.
I don't know how, like, if this is going to be Best Picture or anything. I think the performances are great. I love Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy in Warrior, but I don't know if this is, like, Best Picture material.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't always agree with even the nominations for Best Picture.
Well,
I mean, it's no Tree of Life.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not going to be happy this year when Tree of Life is going to be nominated for Best Picture.
It's going to be nominated. I don't think it's going to win, but it'll be nominated. It'll win Best Cinematography.
Yeah, it'll definitely be nominated, but I don't think it'll win.
That's, I think, where the consensus is. It's going to be Contagion, The Help, and Warrior. And then Bucky Larson, not even in the top 10.
Not even in the top 10?
I am betting you now it's not even in the top 10.
Wow.
I mean, seriously, I think it's going to make like $3 or $4 million. Nobody wants to see this movie. So, I don't even think Nick Swardson's going to go see this movie over the weekend.
Adam Sandler's not even going to see the movie.
They're going to be too busy getting baked together. So, those are box office predictions. Is there anything else going on that you want to talk about? Anything you want to sound off about? Anything you're mad about?
No, I'm pretty. I mean, what's coming out like in, I think, next week or something, the Star Wars Blu-ray.
Oh, you got to rage on that, huh?
I think I'm more upset at the people who are actually going to complain about the revisions and then buy the Blu-rays themselves. I think you're just feeding the beast, and so I think George Lucas will continue to tamper around with Star Wars as long as it's profitable.
Well, here's the thing, because I'm getting so sick of people bitching about it. I am, because it's just like, okay, this is nothing new. So you're telling me that you want the special edition DVD version with no other editions of Return of the Jedi. No, that's not what you're saying. If he just put that on there and didn't do any more tinkering, you're still not going to be happy with it.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, here's the reality with the George Lucas thing is it's available. Now, is it available in anamorphic, cleaned up and everything? No. And yes, he does front load any of his sales with the edition he wants. But honestly, when they did the 2004 DVD set, and then they released the original unaltered theatrical versions on DVD, the sales were just pitiful for the unaltered version.
Yeah, and it just seems like. I mean, he's been changing Star Wars since 1980. You know, I mean, he changed the name from Episode 4 to A New Hope. And so it's not like it's anything new that he's been doing. And again, as long as people buy this product and it's, you know, it's profitable, he's going to keep doing it.
Yeah. And the reality is because this is the reality for people. I know this is not a popular view, but this is the way it works. DVD sales are not made for the fans. The DVD for something like this, DVD sales are made for the mass market general public, and the mass market general public don't care. They don't care that the Ewoks blink. You know, they don't even care that Greedo shot first. They don't care. You know,
Star Wars on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's and the minor changes, even the no on Darth Vader. It's a weak thing, but putting, that's not going to, it doesn't drastically change. I mean, I was reading people going, oh my God, you see the internal struggle in Darth Vader's helmet. I'm like, no, you don't.
There is no internal struggle.
It's a plastic mask that doesn't move. You know, it's one of those things that people get the DVD, and most people don't care. So, you know, people can complain about it, but the reality is Lucas has made the originals available in non-anamorphic. That's fine. Okay. But you don't think, this is the other thing people don't realize. You don't realize that there's going to be a 3D DVD, a 3D Blu-ray release of the Star Wars movies. Maybe at that time he'll add an extra disc with the anamorphic versions. If you were to release the anamorphic version, people would be complaining it's not cleaned up enough and they didn't do a total remaster or this or that. There'd be something they complained about because people just want to hate on George Lucas. Not to defend him. I mean, I think
I think it's just easy to hate on George Lucas.
Yeah. And you're right. People are going to go and buy it anyway. So really, what's the big deal? Because Lucas is like, I don't care. People are buying it anyways. Because here's the thing. I remember when I'm older than you. So I remember when the special editions came out in 97.
Yeah.
They were like, what's funny is when, and I think this is actually, if you were to trace back the start of him tinkering with the stuff. When he did the special editions in 1997, he re-released them in theaters. There was a lot of excitement for it, and it broke box. I think it made like $100 million. The re-release made like $100 million.
Yeah, I actually saw all three of them in theaters.
Yeah, and I think at that point, it's sort of like a gambler who gambles and wins the first time. And then we'll just continue to keep that behavior because that's the first taste they got. So he releases. Everyone told him it was not going to do well. Everyone was like, no, these no one's going to go see these movies again. And they won the box office like two weekends in a row, and it made $100 million for Star Wars' re-release. And so Lucas is like, well, shit, that worked. So when he put it on a Blu-ray, and honestly, you know, even though I think Hayden Christensen's a terrible actor, when I watched this, the DVD versions, and they got Hayden Christensen at the end, I'm like, that's kind of cool. I mean, I think it ties it together a little bit better.
I think that's what he was going for, to tie it together. I can understand why people would be upset, but he had to tie them into the original trilogy, and I could see why he did it. I mean, personally, I was kind of a little upset, but I think when those came out like in 2004, I was upset, but I think now it's like, who really cares now?
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, everyone's bitching about Jedi because at the end they supposedly added the no. I've not seen the actual version of it. I've just seen what people have mocked up, so I can't guarantee that it's accurate.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So it's in there, and they're complaining about that, and they're complaining about the Ewoks blinking. But here's the thing: if you go back historically, you go back even before this, people are like, oh yeah. Everyone hated on Return of the Jedi because it had teddy bears in it and this, and everyone hated on it. And now they're like, how dare you touch Return of the Jedi?
How dare you touch these Ewoks that we hate?
Yeah, they're like, how dare you change this emotional ending of Return of the Jedi that I loved ever since? And I'm like, because here's the other thing. I was 11 when I saw Return of the Jedi, when it came out. And I saw it in the theaters, freaking loved it. It was my favorite Star Wars movie because I was 11. I didn't understand the depth of Empire. So I loved the Jedi. So, and then when I got to be an adult, after watching them again, I'm kind of like Jedi's the least of the three. But the thing is, as an 11-year-old, Jedi was the best. And if you walk through a toy department, and everyone, because the thing is, when they released the Clone Wars as a movie, it didn't do terribly well. It did okay, but not like a Star Wars movie. And everyone hated on it, and the reviewers hated on it, and the quote-unquote Star Wars fans hated on it, and they're just like, oh, it's just terrible, blah, blah, blah. Go to a toy store, it's nothing but Clone Wars toys.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new generation of people watching these movies, and that's what they're going to like. They're going to like Jar Jar Binks. They're going to like the Clone Wars series. It's kind of getting that far removed from the original generation that fell in love with Star Wars. Now it's this new generation.
But even the ones who fell in love with it originally, it depends on how old you were. Like I said, I was a child when Star Wars came out. I watched the Star Wars Holiday Special live.
Oh, man.
And loved it. Why? Because I was 8.
And what about now?
Well, now it's ridiculous. But I remember seeing it. I thought it was cool as hell. And I watched when R2-D2 and C-3PO guest starred on Sesame Street. And I saw when Mark Hamill and them were on The Muppet Show. And they were whoring them out like crazy then. People forget what that's like. And they read they sit back on sort of their throne. I'm like, oh, these are such great movies and revered. And I'm like, no, they schmaltzed it up back in the 70s and 80s too. And I saw somebody tweet once. They said, oh, it's clear that George Lucas thinks these are kids' movies instead of adult. I'm like, they were always kids' movies, especially Jedi. And then go back to Empire Strikes Back where they have these... The dialogue in Empire Strikes Back really sucks sometimes. I mean, like, really bad dialogue. Now, other parts are great, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's the darkest of the movies, and that's why people hold on to it, but I do firmly believe at the end of the day, these are all kids' movies.
Yeah. It's almost like Harry Potter. Harry Potter is juvenile literature that just... And the later books got more and more complex, but in its essence, especially if you read the first three Harry Potter books, they're kid books. They're written for kids. Maybe not the last three, but so I don't know. I'm just tired of hearing people complain about it because I'm like, no matter what he does, even if you were to come out like I said, there'll be a 3D Blu-ray edition of the Star Wars movies when he's done with those conversions. Or whatever, if there's going to be a different format, then I don't know. I mean, you're talking 5 years from now. If you were to release an additional disc of Blu-ray and have it remastered, original theatricals untouched, people would still find something to bitch about. You know?
Yeah, I guess you just have to wait another year until when he comes out with another edition, and then people could start complaining about them all over again.
Yeah. I mean, people, yeah, it's just like people, oh my God, it's out there, and oh, Star Wars blues, and I'm just like, oh my God, shut up.
Who knows, maybe 10 years from now, Peter Jackson might do something like this to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing, I think there are a lot of directors who would like to do that, but what restricts them is ownership. Copyright of the actual film, whereas Lucas owns it all, so he can do whatever he wants to. And that's not an excuse of saying, oh, he owns it and it's his work, so he can do what he wants to. But you can't tell me that was it Michelangelo who painted the Sistine Chapel, because I've heard people say, oh, it'd be like when they change it. I'm like, well, yeah, because they commissioned him to do that. Yeah. But if it was his own mural and he saw something, he'd be like, oh, let me tweak this a little bit, you know?
And also, all George Lucas has now is Star Wars.
Yeah.
He still needs to, that's the only way he makes money these days. I mean, he's not so much.
We're not doing like, that's the only way he's going to pay his rent. I mean,
he's a filmmaker that the only thing that he's been working on is Star Wars, something that he did in 1977. And the only thing that he's continuing to do is Star Wars based. Steven Spielberg's not going to go back and change Jaws because Steven Spielberg has moved on from Jaws.
Yeah, but he went and changed E.T.
Yeah, he did change E.T. Yeah. I think he changed it back. I mean, he did allow... I remember when that...
He released both versions in the same disc or in the same set, yeah.
But I don't think he's going to change Jurassic Park or anything like that.
No.
Or Minority Report because he's doing other things.
He's going to go back and change 1941.
Thing is, no one remembers Steven Spielberg for one movie. They remember him for many movies.
Yeah.
People only remember George Lucas for one movie.
Well, but the thing is, George Lucas has never been a big director. I mean, if you look at his earlier stuff, THX-1138 is an art film. And American Graffiti is... You know what American Graffiti is? American Graffiti is the non-space version of Luke Skywalker before Star Wars happened.
Yeah. I can see that.
That's all it is. I mean, Ron Howard is Luke Skywalker.
Cool music in there as well.
Yeah, and it's like, if you were to take American Graffiti, set it in space, and have it end right before the droids show up, that's American Graffiti. It's him shooting womp rats with Biggs. That's the... And so, I mean, so it's like you said, it's like that's all he has, and he's never been a big, he's not been a director's director. And he's only directed four of the Star Wars movies because he's been much more of a technocrat. He's always a gearhead. He always has been worried about the technology and what it can do and how he can expand stuff. So, anywho, I guess we've talked about Star Wars enough. Let's talk about a Fat Guy 5.
All right.
In honor of Contagion, these are the five scariest movie illnesses. Because these are the ones that are like make you want to use Purell. The first one is the most obvious comparison to Contagion, and that is the metabovirus from Outbreak.
It's a lot of similarities between Outbreak and Contagion. Contagion. I just kept thinking, well, this is a lot like Outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, very much so. Although it's funny in watching Contagion because he does do it as such a. You know, trying to make it so realistic and documentary style that that Outbreak just seems so ridiculous at that point. You know, where like they say to Cuba Gooding Jr., he's like, go make the vaccine. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go do it in this trailer over here. I'm going to be pumping out gallons of it by the end of the day. So, yeah. But the metabovirus is basically Ebola. So...
And I liked Outbreak. I remember when it came out, that was like one of the movies that when it came out on video, I would watch all the time for some reason.
Did you have a monkey?
I think it was the monkey that I just enjoyed watching because it was a pretty lovable monkey from what I remember. He was also on Friends. I remember that as well.
That's right. Have you ever actually interacted with a monkey?
No.
Monkeys are not nice creatures because they look cute, but they're really smart. And here's a reality in biology is the smarter you are, the worse you can be, because you can figure things out and you learn to manipulate. And monkeys look cute, but they're real bastards sometimes. I actually was involved in a photo shoot and they had monkeys on it. It's just bizarre. I'm not even going to explain. It was like this ESPN photo shoot that I was doing location scouting for, and they were doing this like rock climber. This girl was a rock climber, and they wanted monkeys with her, so they brought on a whole bunch of these monkeys, and they were assholes. The monkeys were not the handler. The monkeys can be mean.
they're not cuddly and curious like I read in children's books.
They're not like Curious George, and they spread the metabovirus. So the hell with those monkeys. But that's even, and what's great part about Outbreak with the monkey is the monkey was a Typhoid Mary. So it wasn't symptomatic. So it's like, yeah, bitches, I'm going to get you killed by coughing on you. Here, have some of my banana I just chewed on. Now you're going to die.
And then we also have 28 Days Later.
That's right, The Rage. This goes back to the Fat Guy 5 we had last week, which were the scariest movie, real-life movie monsters, and it was apes in a lab are terrifying things. And both Outbreak, although it wasn't in a lab, it was just a single crazy monkey. And then 28 Days Later, these apes infected with rage.
Yeah, with 28 Days Later, a lot of people get confused thinking that they're zombies.
Yeah,
in the movie, but they're not zombies. Although they have characteristics like they are zombies, but they're not.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I know that. Danny Boyle's come out and said, "Well, they're not zombies," and they're not. But you know, that's semantics at that point. I mean, they're not reanimated Living Dead.
Yeah,
but I still don't want them in my house.
No, I remember when I saw 28 Days Later. I saw it in the theater, and I was the only one in the theater watching this movie. Mm. And then I had my thought.
You're going to walk out and it's going to be an apocalypse.
Well, if no one was in this theater, would they be running this movie right now?
Oh.
I don't know if anyone could ever answer that. Like, if no one was in the theater, would this movie be playing right now?
Oh, you mean like wait, would it, well, it would have, if they start it, once it goes, the platter spins and you're stuck with the movie.
So they played for no audience is what I'm saying.
You know what? I don't know. Because I have been the only one. I don't think they do. They may not. It depends on the theater. Because I have been the only one in a theater before.
Yeah. And like if you weren't there, would this movie still be playing?
I can tell you this. When I saw The Love Guru in 2008, and I was the only one there, it played. So I don't know if they would have stopped it if I would have walked out or if I didn't show up. So the next one is for Serenity. For those who know me, I am not a fan of Joss Whedon.
Wherein as I am a huge fan of Joss Whedon. Actually, Firefly is my favorite TV show of all time.
Wow.
Serenity is actually my number 9 favorite movie of all time.
Wow. You actually have, you make a list. I couldn't tell you what my list is of favorite of all time.
Yeah, I just made that list. I revisit this list every month, and I just keep saying, like, well, I think this all belongs here. I think this all belongs here.
Wow. Every month? Man, that's a time commitment. I'm lucky if I do my laundry. but no, the Reavers from there, they were, what was it? It was a retrovirus that ultimately turns out it's a retrovirus that's supposed to calm people down, but it had the opposite effect on a tiny portion of the population, and they turned into crazy people who would rape you to death.
Yeah, which is kind of a controversy for Browncoats, mm-hmm. like which are Firefly fans.
Yeah, I know what a Browncoat is.
When the movie came out, a lot of people weren't very happy with the fact that Reavers, who were also on the TV show, this is how they became, how people became Reavers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would like to think that they just went crazy and they just went mad, and this is what people would just turn into, and people would turn other people into Reavers. And so when this came out in Serenity, a lot of people were kind of upset that
really?
It was actually a virus, and that this is that the Alliance created this for people.
I did not know that this was as big of a controversy as you said it was.
I myself, I'm on the fence. I kind of don't like that idea that it was all created by man. I sometimes do like to think that, you know, it's just people who are out in space for a long time without contact with other people, and that's what happens to them.
Do you want that being out, the seclusion makes you want to rape somebody to death?
Yeah, that you just go so violently crazy that the only way you can express yourself is through violent rape.
It's like a, or it'd be like some sort of like space herpes virus that causes you to go insane.
Yes, have safe sex when violently raping people.
Yeah, if you're going to rape somebody to death, please use a condom. what's the next one on the list?
We have Children of Men.
Yes.
A lot of people like to think, don't necessarily think of this movie as an infectious outbreak film, but all that stuff happens before the movie starts, and we're kind of left with a dystopian future.
Well, and the whole thing is that they don't know why it actually happened. And they don't really know the process of why people aren't having kids, whether it's the men, whether it's the women. It's an unknown, but it is something biological that's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely scary. The other one, and I wanna point this one out, is Quarantine/Wreck, and the super rabies or super demon rabies, however, whichever version you're looking at. That's scary. That's pretty scary. I'm glad that doesn't exist.
I haven't seen Quarantine.
Oh, you didn't? Have you seen Wreck?
No, it's Quarantine's the original, right?
That's No. Wreck is the original.
That's in Spanish, right?
Yes.
And Quarantine's the American remake. I haven't seen this.
Both are good. But what's funny about Wreck is I've got kids, so they watch a lot of Dora the Explorer.
I thought you were going to say they watch a lot of this type of...
They watch a lot of horror films. No, they watch a lot of Dora the Explorer. And it's amazing. It's sort of like if you look at Wreck properly, it's like a Dora the Explorer episode gone horribly wrong.
I can imagine.
Because they're like, where do we go next? We got to go up the stairs. So we go foyer, stairs, apartment. Rah! You know? and there's a part where everyone starts yelling, help me. Whenever they're getting attacked or whatever, and that's a Udame in Spanish. And so always in Dora the Explorer, like, a Udame. So I'm like, oh, wait. And so I've learned Dora the Explorer has helped me learn or at least understand Wreck better. So, yeah.
I should check these out. I mean, I've been hearing nothing.
You should.
And this is like kind of like a found footage type of movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would suggest to see Wreck first. But also then watch Quarantine. Watch them both. You can watch either one first. But I mean, they're like, I would say 95% shot for shot, the exact same thing.
Like I think of like Cloverfield. Is it a lot like Cloverfield?
Yeah, it's a TV crew, and okay. So it's everything that's captured on that TV camera.
Okay.
But it's definitely watch them both, because there's that 3 or 4% difference that makes them very different movies in the very end.
Hmm. Interesting.
And then if you're going to go watch Wreck 2, Wreck 2 is pretty good. I've heard Quarantine 2 is pretty awful.
Huh. So. Well, they go in different routes that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, another one that's kind of a scary movie illness is from 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
We should have had that on the list.
Another dystopian future, and how you got to stop the virus that would kill everyone in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
They think.
And then another honorable mention is The Super Flu from The Stand. And that gets an honorable mention because it's not really a movie. It's a TV show based on Stephen King's book. And it was the Super Flu was a genetically engineered bioweapon that eventually escaped and killed everybody except for a few people, like Molly Ringwald.
Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe, Molly Ringwald, the dumb guy from Coach.
I thought you were going to say Rob Lowe, Molly Ringwald, Judd Nelson's there, and Paul is there.
He's there, and Miguel Ferrer from Traffic is there.
I was like, oh, The Stand, produced by John Hughes.
hey, that'd be funny. Anyways, I think that's it. Shall we move on to the final segment?
Sure.
All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Woohoo! Yay, Fat Guys at the Movies. We talked about a bunch of cool things in the last segment. If you're on the radio, you can go back and listen. You can hear what we have to say about the Star Wars Blu-rays and the controversy those are causing. Hint, hint. It's not exactly what you think. We also did a great Fat Guy 5 of the 5 scariest movie diseases in honor of Contagion. Did some box office stuff. But what do we have coming up next here?
We have the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. You go first.
Which? Let's see. United 93
That's
and
right.
Straw Dogs. Two very good movies coming out this that just came out.
Both difficult to watch at times.
Yes, but Straw Dogs. There's a remake of that, and I feel people should watch the original. Before they see the remake, it's a very hard movie to watch, but it's very, very good movie.
Mm-hmm. It's Sam Peckinpah.
Yeah, one of my favorite filmmakers. He just has a really cool name, Sam Peckinpah.
It's just awesome, yeah. And then, of course, United 93, which is coming out because this coming week is the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes.
So, way to bring that one down. way to bum out the room.
Well, especially I live in New York City.
So that's true. Yeah, cool. It's rough. But other stuff to talk about that's on DVD and Blu-ray. Everything Must Go with Will Ferrell, which is an interesting movie. I wasn't wild about it, but I think it's an interesting, slightly more dramatic turn from Will Ferrell. Something along the lines of Stranger Than Fiction, only not as lighthearted.
I liked Everything Must Go. I think I actually like it better than Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh, really?
I'm a big fan of the writer, what the short story was based on, Raymond Carver short story, and I'm a big fan of Raymond Carver.
Okay. And there's also Hannah on DVD and Blu-ray. Of course, this is Joe Wright's non-Keira Knightley movie.
But it'd be interesting to think if Keira Knightley was playing the role of Hannah.
Well, didn't they do that and call it Domino? No,
yes.
I'm pretty sure that this girl fills out a dress more than Keira Knightley does.
Yeah, Saoirse Ronan's in a bunch of Joe Wright movies as well, like Atonement.
That's true. She was in Atonement, that's right. And I think, didn't she play the Jamie Foxx character in The Soloist? No, that was Jamie Foxx.
Jamie
Foxx. there's also Scarface on Blu-ray for the first time on Blu-ray in a neat little tin. And what's neat about it, Scarface is a ridiculously fun movie anyways. But what's neat about Scarface, the Blu-ray, is it comes with the original Scarface from 1932. If you've never seen the original, that's actually kind of neat. There's also a new documentary on that Scarface edition, and it has it has people talking about it, and they have like Jillian Barbieri for some reason is interviewed on it, and she's like, "Well, I identified with Scarface because I came from another country, and I know how hard that is." I'm like, "You're Canadian. You're like from Ottawa."
Maybe he did mountains and mountains of cocaine.
I don't understand how you at any point could compare coming, like, immigrating from Ontario to being a Cuban refugee during the Mariel boat dump. She's an idiot, but it's still worth getting on Blu-ray. And then, of course, two very similar series, The Office Season 7, which is Michael Scott's final season, and it's a good season. I liked it. And then Parks and Recreation Season 3, which is fantastic, with Ron Swanson.
Eating a lot of bacon and eggs.
Give me all the bacon and eggs you have. You may have misunderstood me to think give me a lot of bacon and eggs. No, I mean, give me all of your bacon and eggs. So, yeah, those are some great ones. There's also Dressed to Kill on Blu-ray, and you already said the original Straw Dogs on Blu-ray. There's the stinker this week is this movie called Disco Worms, which nobody knows about, and it's from Phase 4, and it's a story of earthworms, go with me on this, who do a disco revival. It's bad.
It's for children, yes?
Yes, for really stupid children.
But would children even remember disco?
Yeah, what 6-year-old's going to be like, "Oh, that's awesome, I remember my platform shoes and my bell bottoms from 2003. This is not a good movie. Anyways, let's do review wrap-up. We had Contagion, which did we both say kind of rocked?
Kind of rocked.
Yeah, kind of rocked. And Warrior, which Rudy saw, and you said that was a rocked, wasn't it?
That definitely rocks. Yep.
And there's Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, which I'm predicting isn't even going to make it in the top 10. And it gets a preemptive suck. For some reason, I want to see the movie, but I'll probably wait till video. Because why would I want to spend $10 to see this film? And then also Creature, which I said kind of rocked. And next week, we've got Drive. I Don't Know How She Does It, which is, I think, should have been called I Don't Know Why They Made This Movie. The Lion King 3D. And Straw Dogs, the remake, starring James Marsden and, what's her name, Lois Lane. That's right. They were both in Superman Returns, weren't they? Yeah.
Both pretty horrible in that movie as well.
That's I like James Marsden, although that was not his best movie.
I really do not like Kate Bosworth in Superman Returns.
Yeah, she's way too young and terrible actor. So anyways, Fat Guys of the Movies, we got to sign off. Rudy, tell us where we can find you and any of your contact information.
You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias, RUDIE_OBIAS, Shakya.com, AutorCast.com, or just go to RudyObias.com for all that information.
Rudy! That's how you sign your emails. Rudy! Exclamation
point. Exclamation point.
All right. Well, we got to go. Thank you guys for listening. Yeah, the part where when they were searching the Hong Kong, they're tracking down the Hong Kong waiter, mm-hmm. and they're like there was this music video thing in a montage, and it was just a montage of people walking and talking, but without hearing them walk and talk. It was just they were just doing a lot of talking during this, and then they went to the guy's apartment, and like that was it.
I just felt that. They introduce so much, but they really don't do much with it. Yeah, and your emotional tie into the movie, it's not that, for me anyways, it wasn't as emotional as I think they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Your emotional tie in it is Matt Damon and his daughter, but I don't think that was as hard hitting or as, I'm not as attached to that as anything.
Well, and it escalated really fast because it was like, And I also question sort of the pacing of it because the first two acts take place in the first 30 days. And like near the end of it, they're like walking down the street. There's trash everywhere. And I'm like, I don't know if you'd be thrown in that much garbage anarchy in 30 days. I mean, you generate trash. But I mean, this looks like it'd been like months that people had been throwing garbage out in the street.
Yeah, and this is like a 6 month period, right, between beginning and the end.
Well, not even that. That part, like by the time Jude Law's character's putting flyers under windshield wipers, that was only like day 26 or something like that. And I'm like, I don't know if you. And then when they had the scene where they're looting and they're going into the pharmacy and trying to get that herbal drug. I'm like, wow, it just suddenly escalated really fast there. I don't know. I will give them credit on this, is that at least it was a realistic portrayal of what could happen. It just may not have been presented as well. I mean, it wasn't, I was waiting for the inevitable, Lawrence Fishburne's character was actually somehow involved in this conspiracy to release it. And you're just like, well, that just is trite.
Yeah. Which I'm glad it didn't go that route. I see a lot of comparisons to Traffic, which I love Traffic. So I love that movie so much. Yeah. It's, for me, it's just not as interesting as Traffic. I think that drug war is definitely more interesting, with government hiding whatever and covering things up. In Contagion, it just never really gets to that point for me.
Well, and Traffic was a very rich movie. I mean, he did so much with, even with the shooting style and the film stock on different locations, and then it was a really well thought out film. And plus, everything did tie together in Traffic, whereas this one, you're just like, well, you have the blogger who's maybe fudging his data, and you've got the guy at home, and there's not much to do. Yeah,
there's really not much of interest in this. Like, people really don't resort to any. And it would be interesting if Matt Damon kind of resorted to. I mean, he does a little bit, but into rioting, but breaking into people's houses looking for guns really doesn't go over that line of like, look at what we've turned into, you know?
Yeah.
I watched it with like this in a big theater. We saw it in IMAX, and it was like all New York press. It was a lot of. Mm-hmm. Journalists and bloggers. And when they got to the blogging part of this movie, when Elliot Gould's character said, "You're not a journalist, you're a blogger.
You're a graffiti artist with punctuation."
Like, so many people, like older people, I thought, like, were cheering and like applauding.
Oh,
what do you want? Like,
well, like, yeah, bitches, you guys suck.
Mostly bloggers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't like how they're portraying us in movies.
Yeah.
But I certainly know that type, you know, that would always bring up their hit count, you know, their unique hit count, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a, you know, you're in anarchy, you're the apocalypse. And he's like, no, I want more people. Well, that's the other thing. I was like, the entire infrastructure, of the police and the health system and everything just shut down. Yet internet still worked and iPhones still worked. And municipality and like electricity still worked.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Water, they were still running water and.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. If it went into this much anarchy, yeah, there'd be places where the grid would be on, but you know, if a power line goes down because somebody crashes into it, because if you're gonna have looting for people just for necessities, you're gonna have looting for TVs still, and you're gonna have. People, you're going to have anarchy in the street. You're going to have gangs and that sort of thing. That would destroy the physical infrastructure stuff. It was okay.
It was named like elements like that Marion Cotillard storyline that upset me so much because it went nowhere. You know, they introduced.
Well, they flash. They're like, oh, and he's like, you thought, oh, this is going to be. He's like, oh, if we're going to do it, we got to do it now. And you're just like, oh, this is going to be really cool. And then like, no, we're going to kidnap you.
Yeah, we're just going to kidnap you, and then. They don't revisit that until almost the end of the movie.
And then when she's there, she's just like a teacher in a school, and you're just like, wait a minute. And then when she gets pissed off in the airport, she walks away, and you're like, well, wait, where's she going?
And like, I think they could have played up the Gwyneth Paltrow cheating on Matt Damon's character a little bit more. Like, I thought he was going to struggle with that a little bit more than he did.
Yeah.
But that never really – they never – like, again, like a lot of elements – they were introduced a lot of good elements in the movie, but they were never really explored and it never really came together.
Yeah.
And which is a shame. I love Steven Soderbergh, and I think I'm giving it a little bit more positive review because it's Steven Soderbergh, but because it is well shot, I think. I think it's beautifully shot, and I actually like the score of this movie quite a bit. But I felt like even the casting of Lawrence Fishburne, it felt like it could have been a better performance, maybe.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that they had all three people from The Talented Mr. Ripley.
That's true.
Since Talented Mr. Ripley, where we have...
But they never showed up at the same
frame. Yeah, I was like waiting for them to show up together, and I was thinking, like, if they survived at the end of Talented Mr. Ripley, this is what their lives would be like.
Yeah.